But now on Saturday Extra, I'm delighted to say a big announcement for the future of equitable health and education policy in Australia. This morning on RN, leading businessman and philanthropist Harold Mitchell is announcing the formation of a new national public policy think tank. The Mitchell Institute for Health and Education Policy is a joint project between the Harold Mitchell Foundation and Victoria University. Now, Mr. Mitchell has had a very big career, and this is just the next stage. It started in advertising over 50 years ago when he quit his job as a labourer in a sawmill in small town Victoria and moved to Melbourne to become an office boy at an advertising agency. Now, as executive chairman of Australia's biggest media buying company, he believes there are new challenges ahead. One is that he wants to make a difference to the health and education outcomes of low and middle income families, where he stood years ago, a group vital, he says, to Australia's success in the future as he sees it. So, Harold Mitchell, welcome back to Saturday Extra.
Geraldine, good morning and thank you for having me.
Well, congratulations, Harold, on this very bold venture. What are you trying to achieve with it?
Well, I think we're all the same, you know, even in what you do. We want to make a difference, no matter what it is. You don't want to waste a minute of your time. And I've had a wonderful life in this country. My city of Melbourne has been very good to me. I arrived in that city with, I think, $4, whatever that meant then, one suit, 15-year-old and a job, and it's been incredible for me. And so this is my way of looking at what can I now do. I've had an unbelievable career in advertising. I built probably the biggest advertising business that we've seen in modern times, with 1,400 great Australians doing it, and I want to put something back in some areas as a specialist. I built my own business, being very careful about doing the things that were doable, the things that we could do, and aiming for the world. I wasn't satisfied with anything else other than being the best in the world, and so I look around and say, what can I do now? I've been lucky enough to...
But you've already had your organisation, like you've had your philanthropic organisation already, the foundation, so what extra is a think tank going to do?
Well, think tanks are unbelievable in what they can do, because in our own business over a long period of time, I know that there were times on Saturday morning, as it turns out, that I would manage to get away by myself and be away from the hurly-burly of everything that happened and say, what next? What else can we do? And so it can do exactly that. It is totally focused, focused on two areas, which are health and education. I'll come back to that in a moment. It can do things outside the regular structure. You mentioned before the Lowy Institute. And what was the Lowy Institute? There was that wonderful man, Alan Ginsell, who put it together. We talked to him. And he said that that think tanks, they do something that others can't do, that they have a structure to them. And you say, well, surely government has a structure. Yes, it has a structure about government. But this is about what next, what has to be different. And so that does that in every way. They can
it
bring evidence
to it.
Also
drew people in. Sorry to cut across you, but yes. I really watched
Alan
Ginsell.
Well, that one
Alan
of those mornings, by the way. You cut in whenever you like.
All right. Thank you, Harold. Thank you, Harold. I watched him build that with great interest. And he, in particular, drew the public in. You know, they had a whole lot of devices. I mean, we do a lot of reporting on the Lowy, a lot of people about sort of big guests coming. But they also had weekly luncheons where they had invited Sydneysiders in so that they built a broader constituency. Ordinary people were invited to be better equipped about foreign policy, which had been the sort of the stuff of policy wonks. Now, do you want to do something like that?
Think how good this is, that we picked Victoria University, or they picked us. It came together like that, brilliantly done in every way. And I had such a great feeling about the western suburbs, in this case of Melbourne, but Sydney's the same, and there are equivalents in all of the big cities of the world. What a great laboratory, if we have to look at it that way, of a couple of million people. It is the future of what they are. They're clever people, they're young kids, but that way it is a laboratory, just as you're saying with the Lowy, being able to reach out to the people. Here, right in front of us, we've got a couple of million people, and university totally devoted to making this work. And that's a big thing. We've got great universities in Australia. This one wants to make a difference. And how good is that? And they've got the laboratory of the people around them in that area, just as you're saying, the Lowy, reaching out to the people.
And, I mean, is this idea been creeping up on you for a while?
Yeah, so it was in 2000 we started an internet business and it made another $10 million, just like that, and I thought...
So you're almost embarrassed about the amount of money you're making in a way.
Well, in a little way, you know, money hasn't driven me in any way, and you find people have made a lot of money. That wasn't the sole motivation for them doing it. In my case, I hate losing, and it was really that. And so I put $10 million into a foundation, which is the base of what we do, and at that time, it was devoted to health because that's just so critical. My health was always a struggle, as you and others might well know, as I got to that. And the arts, because that was a part of what my life and what it was. And so over a long period of time, we've been comfortable with the fact that we can make a difference. And there are some incredible things that we've done by absolutely focusing on it. We had to learn a bit as we went. But now we're at a point where we can take the next step in just being able to do things that as individuals can do. Just one thing I should say that always has stuck in my mind. My city of Melbourne, in 1901, it had the highest per capita income in the world. It was a very clever place. We had more patents per head than anywhere else. 1901, it had the 50 years of the gold before that. We didn't have a federal government. In fact, that first year was the federal government. You know, Geraldine, what it had? It had people. It had Australian people who were brilliant. And that's what's going to drive us into this next century that we've got now. It'll be the individuals and the people. And if I can be one of them, we are going to have the greatest century of the three centuries of the white population in Australia that we've ever had.
What I'm struck by is that something must have really been making you concerned. Is it about the fact that you're seeing gulfs develop in Australian society? I mean, you came from a sawmill, it's very humble sawmiller's background.
I did.
Your mother, because I've interviewed you before, your mother left at a very early age, a lot of troubles in your family.
Yeah.
You've had winners and losers inside your siblings, and you've really seen life, even though you've been very successful. But are you worried about growing inequality in Australia? Well, is that what's driving this?
We all have children and grandchildren. And every generation of Australians, the six or seven that we've had of white settlement in this country, I'll call it white because we're now the most multicultural place that you could ever find. But it was what every parent strived for was to have a better life for their children. Mm. You would know it. You could recognise that. And everyone listening right now would say, that's what we did. Do you know, this next generation is going to be worse off than their parents, and that's the first time that has ever happened in our history here in Australia. What a great tragedy. We have this incredible wealth. Mm. There's something, by the way, called the Dutch disease, which is, if you know of that, that the gas in the Netherlands in 1957, I think it was, meant that for the next 10 years they had plenty of money coming in and they became less productive.
Because it actually squeezed out a lot of other industries, and that's the risk of our resources.
We've got to make sure that doesn't happen here, and we are on the edge of doing it. All of the current commentary that you see that. Now, if people like me can help make that difference and encourage others, Frank Lowy is marvellous. I mean, you talk to Frank.
So he's obviously been quite an inspiration for you as a model for what he does.
Oh, Frank is tremendous. You talk to Frank. He wants to give back. I mean, he came from a poor beginning. And that was the story of America. America has been so brilliant. 5% of the world's population developed quite rightly, deservedly, over the last 100 years, 25% of the world's wealth. Because they were immigrant people, they wanted to do it, and they may well reinvent themselves again. It'll be because of that.
But just let's come back to this issue about Australia and setting up in the western suburbs with this big gift. Like, if you had to focus on one thing that really riles you about health and education, what is it?
Well, the fact is that we seem to be pouring even more money in and not getting our value for it. Now, you would have seen the commentary just a week or so back in Victoria where the school teachers have earned a higher wage. I'm happy about that. They should be well paid. But is it going to be a better result of it other than just the teachers are getting paid more? I wish them well. So, and you look at health. That health budget federally is some $60 or $70 billion, and yet you look around, you talk to people, and they're concerned about health. So are we getting the value for the money? The answer is quite simply no. Now, how can we help? We can help by being independent. Now, we're attached to a university. You need to do that because you get the great intellectual base of what that is. You get the attraction, as I have with people like Lindsay Tanner. I mean, Lindsay
Lindsay Tanner's going to be your chair.
And he's incredible in what he's going to do because of that.
But you've made it bipartisan, haven't you?
Absolutely bipartisan.
Rob Knowles, the former health minister.
And highly considered of the Liberal side. Peter Dawkins.
This is on your board.
And he's on the board as vice chancellor of the university, and Peter is wonderfully out on a big limb. This has to work, and all these people have taken a risk because they want to see it make a difference, and that's what it is. So the point about why do it? Because you can. We're all exactly like that. We look at it and we say, is this going to be the best century for Australia or not? And my fear right now is that the way it's going, it won't be. It won't be. But it will be if we go back to 1901, where all of those amazing people in Australia, they invented what the next part of Australia would be. And it would be so wrong, Geraldine, if we let this moment pass and we had the money that's grown out of the resources boom of the last little while and we wasted it.
Harold Mitchell's my guest on Saturday Extra, I'm delighted to say, who's just announcing a big new fund to fund something called the Mitchell Institute for Health and Education Policy, a joint project between the Harold Mitchell Foundation and Victoria University to change the way we debate health and education. Because that's it. I mean, in a sense, this is a real effort by you, if I'm reading this properly, yeah, to say, I want to change the public conversation about these things. Is that right?
Absolutely, because let's stay with education. Instead of school teachers getting paid more, noble. I've got no problem with all of that. But what if the debate is there a better outcome at the end of it? All of the tables that we're now seeing is that the kids aren't quite as good in this incredible changing world that we're living in. You know, we're in the Asian century, and we know that. 50% of the world's wealth will be in Asia in the blink of an eye. That means that we are competing like you could not believe. The 23 million people in Australia have got competition to the north incredibly. Are we setting our kids up so that they will be able to compete? And there will be a lot of people saying, we're not quite now. What a tragedy that would happen. But we can make a difference. It's too hard for government to do. You know, governments run on average federally, I think it's 28 months or something like that. Governments, in order to get in, I've told many politicians, and they'll agree privately, that in order to get elected, they have to promise to do things they can't. They have to promise to do things that they can't. We make it too hard for them. They're good people. They're well-meaning people. But they can't make the difference that they have to do. They can't make the great big things because it's too risky to do. Like, I'll give you one instance. Might or might not be possible, but it's a very good idea. You know, if you're running a factory and suddenly you want a greater output and you're running the one shift during the day, you know what you do? You run a night shift. And so you use the same factory, you use what you've got, but you run two shifts of it. Now, perhaps schools should have two shifts. The kids wouldn't mind it.
They do in lots of parts of Asia, of course. They do have two shifts.
And that's not a bad thing to look at.
Now, recently, the Business Council of Australia chief, Tony Shepherd, presented at the press club, and you may have seen it, and they talked about longer-term thinking. They named better school completion rates, compulsory Asian language study, and performance pay for teachers among their policies for a more prosperous Australia. Mm. Is that the sort of...
That is fantastic.
Do you imagine that your new body will be looking at that or
Absolutely.
Going into different areas again?
And what the BCA is there is, I am so pleased to see it, that they've gone out, because what you must do, and I've found this in business, what you must do if there's a problem, find the solution. Don't just keep whinging about the problem. Don't put a band-aid on anything. Say, what is the solution and why and how? The other thing I found in business, which is so important, that I'm sure will be critical to this, you know, why should you do anything unless you're the best in the world? Unless you're the best in the world and anything like that, why shouldn't our kids be just the smartest that you could ever have in the world? So people look at it and do that. Why shouldn't we have the best ABC that the world could ever have, the best mental health institutes? And on the question of health, just think of the great problems that we've got. And yet, amongst it, I'm chairman of the Florey Institute in Melbourne. It's the second biggest mental health research unit in the world. Do you know, I found that there are four particular things that they do there that we'll push on with it, where we are number one or number two in the world. If you look at the story of Apple, and Steve Jobs, who built all of that, he had one very simple thing. Let's be the best. And it's the same with everything here. And so what the Business Council is saying is along that way, which is we need to be better. But I go one further than that. Say, why should we ever stop at that? This is the greatest opportunity that we've had in all of the period that
you
we've
mean
been
Australia's
here. Australia's had to be the best. This will be the best century we've ever had. And all of the evidence right now, no matter how you try and paper over it, is that we're failing.
Now, I do want to ask you how personal this all is in a way, Harold. You took what many would see as a very radical decision, I think 4 years ago now, to have gastric banding surgery to reduce your weight dramatically. You look terribly well, better than you looked even a year ago. And at the time, you were critical of the fact that a lot of Australians who couldn't afford what you could afford
yes.
to change their life. You now believe you're alive and you wouldn't have been alive. So I just wonder again whether this equity issue is starting to quietly bother you and you want to join in changing the policy.
Well, your regular listeners would know some of the story because we've talked before and I'm happy to talk about it because it helps and that's the only reason for it. So I had a tough enough life, but wonderful, wonderful father made all of that happen. I then started to work. I did fine in advertising. No one knew what advertising was. I got into the world of television and advertising. I knew that and did that so well. But age 23, I was an alcoholic. And
you had to beat your demons as well. I understand that.
We all do.
But the inequity part of it, I just wonder. It may not be something that drives
you.
Oh,
it does.
My
sense is
that it does.
It
but
does.
You don't say that a lot.
Well, I think the other thing, and Alan Gingell was very interesting, he said this, and Frank Lowy, we talked about him a moment ago, that you have to be very, very comfortable with your own ego. It's better not to have one. I mean, there's a difference between being confident and arrogant, and it's sometimes a fine line. I hope I don't cross over it, but that's the difference of it. I'm okay with who I am and what I am, and so during my life, I battled a number of things. We all do. You mentioned at the beginning of this about obesity. Well, it was ridiculous having stopped drinking. I managed that. I was very lucky, worked it out. My mother was an alcoholic, a brother was an alcoholic, and it was a tough old time.
You're a teetotaler, aren't you?
I haven't drunk since I was 23, and that's fine, but then I put on weight, and it was ridiculous that my metabolism just stopped, and there are so many people out there, some clever surgery now, the lap band operation which I had, I could lose weight, no trouble, but you'd then put it on, and your metabolism would have slowed to the point that you put on even more, and there'd be plenty of people out there having exactly the same struggle. Now, there's an operation, an easy one. You would have seen some very notable public figures of recent time doing it.
Sure.
And that fixed me. And
the question is, should public money pay for that?
Absolutely.
Because that's the debate,
now,
to whether that
mine,
should be...
I should know exactly, but I think mine might have cost between $6,000 and $8,000.
I've read 13.
It might have been. I should look that up. Oh, no, I tell you what happened. That is the extra 5,000 or more for the 5 million extra suits that you need. But the point of it is that obesity is just one of the health issues, one of the major health issues that we've all got, and it costs us a fortune in the country. Now, the case mix in hospitals is such that it's sometimes better, it's almost always better, for a hospital to do a knee job or a hip job to fit that in than to do the lap band surgery. That's awful, because if that works and that can hold people together, it shouldn't be an easy fix. If that can hold together, it's just one simple example of how we can do things much better into the future, because, Geraldine, I promise you this, if we don't get this bit right in the next 10 years or so, we're doomed for a long time to come, and we will have wasted the greatest opportunity that we could ever have. And nobody who's got kids, you've got kids, we're all the same, nobody wants to see things worse for their kids than it would have been. And
but
that's
I suppose
that's
the difficulty is, and is in a way, how you influence change, isn't it? Because with public policy, it's different to business life. It's complex. There's all sorts of competing visions and plans. People hold their views very powerfully, and you've got to be fair to the broad taxpayer.
Don't worry about that. Let me cut across here and say this. I've lived in a world where the people on the other side were people like Kerry Packer and Rupert Murdoch. And if you work out how that works, I mean, you can't
think
find
you can
anyone
work out
tougher
public
than
policy, do you?
Well, you know that one of the things that works in life is simplicity and vision and doing what you need to do. Kerry Packer decided he'd build the Nine Network. Rupert decided he would build this incredible business around the world So what do you learn out of that? One is total focus. Focus on what you can do. So we say there's just these two things. That's all that we want to do. Do what is doable. Do it at the world scale so that it's best in the world, and simplify it. Absolutely simplified. If you make anything too complex, because you know yourself, people will come along. Someone was telling me just yesterday how the full briefing of a minister might take a whole week and have at least 100 pages and four drafts. And finally, the minister has to get about five words out of it. That's in the end the most important thing of all. So I wonder if all of our bureaucrats aren't spinning around in circles at a certain point where it can be totally,
so there's
totally
too much
simplified.
Information you do,
I decided to build the best advertising media company that I could possibly do against the biggest companies in the world, and I did it. Why did I do it? One, because I decided to do it. And, you know, if you don't decide where you're going, you won't get there. People say to me, let's see what will happen. I never say that. Let's make it happen. And that's the biggest thing.
Well, what would you like? Final question, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, would you like this to influence the coming election campaign, or are you taking a much longer strategy?
No. I've been a great believer in acorns to oak trees. There's a couple of things. Yes, as Bill Gates would say, you want to achieve it within your lifetime. And there are things that you want to do with that. And now that I've lost the weight, that lifetime's a long one. And so that's the first thing. But I think, as I was saying before, it is a great problem that we give politicians to try and do something in the short term. How on earth did they build the Snowy Mountain scheme and deciding that 50, 70 years later we needed it? It's an incredible thing to build the Sydney Harbour Bridge in 1932, as wide as that was. Who would have thought there'd be that many cars? You need to have the vision to be able to look forward like that, and this ought to do that, and drive the policy that will enable that to happen. And what I can say is that what we're doing now is not working. And all Australians would agree.
But just in what key respect, say, just because...
The money and the cost of health and education continues to go up. People are complaining that we're not getting what we want to get. If you're paying more money, surely you are, and that just isn't happening. It's as simple as that. And the other thing is that we are in this enormously competitive Asian century where we have got countries to the north that are pouring money into things like you wouldn't believe, that their kids are going to be so good. We want our kids to be competitive. We not only want that, we want them to be better than anybody else. And that's the way it's got to be. And if we can't be number one, don't do it. And that's a key to everything we should be doing in life. And if you get that total focus and the drive to do it and the ability to say it publicly, and that's an important thing, what's true, that will make the difference. And then I'll die happy. But not for a long time to go.
No,
what happened?
Well, Harold, good luck. Very, very good luck. These sort of issues are something that Radio National listeners absolutely adore hearing about. So I do hope that you do manage to make a lot more people interested in it. Thank you very much for your time.
Geraldine, thank you.
And you can see a video of that interview on the Saturday Extra website, I might add. Thanks to RN's Roy Huberman for his work on helping us to cover the Harold Mitchell Foundation in conjunction with Victoria University. We'll follow its progress with a great deal of interest. And Harold is certainly a busy these days. You might have noticed that he's also contributed to, through his foundation, as opposed to the institute, pardon me. See, I'm getting confused myself. He set up the institute. He also had the foundation, which contributed to the huge new work, a painting of a giant barramundi on the roof of the Musée des Quais Branly in Paris, a unique reminder of Australia, I think the idea is, for the thousands of visitors atop the Eiffel Tower who can look down on the Musée des Quais Branly and the giant barramundi painted by the Kimberley artist Lina Niadbi. So that's all and more of Harold enduring this next stage of his life. Your thoughts most welcome on these and other ventures that some of our wealthier Australians are setting up.